It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti, in for Paul Guggenheimer. From the City of Lights to a city famous for its red light district, our intrepid travel contributor Elaine LeBalm has seen it all and then some. Back from her European excursion, Elaine LeBalm, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town, joins me now in Studio A. Elaine, welcome home and welcome back to Pittsburgh.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Andy.
Okay, New Girl, you've just returned from a three-week romp through Europe, and I know you said you had a great time there, but you also feel like the fall is maybe a better time to travel. Why is that?
Well, you know, suffice it to say that we weren't the only folks with this idea to take ourselves and our child over to Europe during summer vacation. It was very crowded, especially when you talk about the larger cities, the bigger capitals, London, Paris, just so many travelers. And some folks think, oh, well, you know, but the locals have gone to the beach, so it's going to be emptier in August. There's plenty of people left in those cities still. So if you can do it in the fall, if you can take even if it's a more abbreviated trip with your kids, or if you have the luxury and you're traveling, say, without kids who are in school, going September, October, I think is a fantastic time to visit. The crowds will certainly have gone away. The weather could be very nice as well. So a fall visit is prime.
So where all did you go? You were there 3 weeks. Did you stay in one place or did you?
We moved around. We started in London because we flew in and out of London. 3 days in London, 4 days in Paris, 5 days in Amsterdam and Madrid. And we chose those cities. Well, a lot of people, of course, would choose London and Paris for an excursion in Europe. We took our 12-year-old son, so it was his first time over there. But we also tried to find a touchstone in the places we were going to. My sister-in-law has lived in Paris for 30 years, so that had to be on the agenda. A good friend and colleague of my husband's has been based in Amsterdam for several years now. We had the opportunity to see him and do a little bit of the city with him. And then my family hails from Spain, and I'm fluent in Spanish, so that made Madrid a natural for us. So I think that you want to choose, sure, cities that you want to see, but if there's also a familial reason or you've got friends or you've got some work reason to go to a particular city, I think you choose those places that might make it just a little bit easier for you to navigate these large cities.
That's a great point. I traveled with my family. I have a 14-year-old son and 11-year-old daughter, and we went to Spain this summer as well. And
yep.
My wife is a Spanish teacher, and she had lived in Spain.
Perfect.
And really wanted me to see it. I'd never been there. And so we went to Barcelona, but that's almost like they're actually taking a vote this fall about whether to remain part of Spain. But you're absolutely right about the travelers, too, and how crowded it got. But let's start with the beginning of your trip. How did London you went into first?
Yes.
How was London?
With London. You know, London was terrific. And, of course, we did a couple of things that, you know, that sort of are the top. And one, you can only do actually from late July to late September, and that is touring the staterooms at Buckingham Palace. And my son, like many, had seen.
Is that because the royals have left town?
Town. They're at Windsor Castle, exactly. So they've got 60 days when they can fit these tours in. And let me tell you, they're just cranking them, all day long. But the tour is featured actually in a snippet in the National Treasure movies. Oh. And so my son remembered it well. I had to go. And you know what? It was absolutely worthwhile. The architect who actually worked on Buckingham Palace was fired because he overspent. And you can see how much he overspent. I mean, the gilded rooms and the grandeur. It may sound a little bit hokey and cheeky, but I got to tell you, it's absolutely worth your while. So we started with that, segued to the Tower of London, saw the crown jewels and the armor and whatnot. And then another real treat, which, you know, a lot of people go to Westminster Abbey. We decided to go to St. Paul's Cathedral instead, which is a smaller church, but you can climb the 527 steps to the top and get this amazing 360-degree view. And the ticket to get into St. Paul's is really short money. You know, a lot of people will pay a lot of money, spend a lot of time waiting to get on the London Eye to get a panoramic view. Goodness me, go to St. Paul's Cathedral. Beautiful church. Walk to the top. Yeah, you may be panting when you get to the top, but it's a fantastic view. So we loved that. My son, who's a big Doctor Who fan, lots of Doctor Who fans out there. The show just started its, I don't know, 48th season or whatever it is. You go to Earl's Court Station on the tube, and you can see the TARDIS box. All Doctor Who fans. Oh, this is the blue police box that's bigger on the inside. It's like an old red phone box, but it's blue. It's bigger. They have the actual TARDIS box off of this station. Of course, there's this steady procession of people going to see the TARDIS and getting their photograph with it. Victoria and Albert Museum. Most of the museums in London are actually free of charge, you know, the National Gallery and whatnot. The V&A has a fantastic exhibit right now through February, I believe, called Disobedient Objects. And the je ne sais quoi, as it were, is the role of objects in the movements for social change. So whether it's an art piece or some dolls or an old truck, you know, something that has symbolized and sort of been a catalyst for these, you know, transformative social change movements over the last 30, 40 years. Loved that.
Exactly. So you went from there and then you went to Paris. And I'm trying to think, like, what you just described sounds terrific from my adult perspective. And I love Paris for the idea. It's one of those cities where you can just walk the streets and sort of soak in the city.
Yes.
But I'm wondering, for, you know, traveling with your son, how did you make Paris exciting for
– How did we make Paris – well, I got to tell you, just the simple stuff. Again, the Eiffel Tower. He couldn't believe how big that was. He, you know, being up close and – you know, he's on Instagram like all the kids. So right away sending that photo back to his peeps back home, and they're all like, oh, my gosh, can't believe it's so big because he looks so small next to us. So you take him to the big attractions. You also do little things with them. And with kids, they're very, you know, inspired by food. So we just found this amazing place for, you know, the jambon at fromage, the classic ham and cheese sandwich.
But when you say it like that, it sounds so much more interesting.
For him, it was a ham and cheese sandwich, believe you me. So finding good food for them, you know, although I got to tell you, you know, we can't underestimate our kids. And you, I know, like me, we've been taking our kids to lots of places for a long time. Travel is a wonderful experience for both kids and adults. You know, we took him to Notre Dame Cathedral. He absolutely appreciated it. You know, you stand out there, it's huge. The architecture is fantastic. He was in awe. So yeah, sometimes I would be a little bit cautious about thinking, well, do we have to find that sort of, like, you know, that attraction? Like, did we go to Disneyland Paris? Absolutely not. We didn't need to do that. We have Disney at home. So I tried to sort of step it up a little bit for him, but also keeping an eye on him and realizing that, you know, the crowds were going to get to him after a certain point. You know, the Gare du Nord, you know, the train station in Paris. I mean, it can be a little bit of a, you know, sketchy place. So trying to get in and out of there as quickly as possible, realizing that they don't have, you know, maybe the stamina or the, you know, the level of appreciation for some things that we do.
Yeah, from my perspective, it's the they're down for the first cathedral, maybe the second, but when you get the third or fourth, then you're in real trouble.
Yeah, you bet. You're right. Stop at three churches and help everybody out. I agree with you there.
This is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, in for Paul Guggenheimer. I'm joined in the studio by travel contributor Elaine LeBalm, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town. You also went to Amsterdam, and of course, you know, we all know about Amsterdam and its red light district. How did you deal with that when you went there, and what was the city like?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, we had hoped to get to the red light district just so he could see it, you know, as sort of a cultural experience. We never got around to it. But what Amsterdam is probably more known for now is how progressive it is. And you see that in the biking. They say that there are more bikes in Amsterdam than people. And this could be true because every bike corral has what seems like 300 bikes on it. Everybody is biking around Amsterdam, women in high heels to get to work on their bikes. They have a kid in the front, kid in the back. They probably drop them off at daycare and then go to the office. So we actually did take a 3-hour guided bike tour one day. And let me tell you, you better take a guided bike tour because this is not biking for amateurs in Amsterdam. You have to be professionals, even though they've got well-marked bike paths. It's a serious sport. And so that gave us a great appreciation for the city, but also going to the absolute gems of the place, the Rijksmuseum, the Van Gogh Museum. The Rijksmuseum is a world-class facility, the Rembrandts and the Van Dycks and whatnot. What I will say about the Van Gogh is that if you think that you are going to see his fantastic paintings, you're not. They're spread all around the world at this point. It's almost more of like a 101 in his life, with a handful of good paintings and his last couple of paintings. So you need to know that.
I agree with you in terms of not underestimating your kids. So we went to Barcelona, and there's Gaudi is everywhere in Barcelona.
Yes.
And the kids really got into it. And there's a Picasso Museum. And
right.
The kids are, you know, they, you know, the kids get into those things. But in Spain, we didn't try to go to the red light district. I will say the beaches were perhaps a little bit more liberal with their clothing optional.
Clothing or not.
That was exciting. So tell us about Madrid then, too. What was Spain like for
Madrid,
you?
Madrid, Spain.
You
and we're both just
right?
back from Spain. What a country. You know, I mean, you lead with the food, the tapas. It seems we were eating morning, noon, and night.
Tapas.
Tapas, yes. These small little foods. So like a small little sandwich. sandwich or just, you know, a piece of fish on a square of Melba toast. And, you know, they've got these markets, mercados, as they call them, most notably the Mercado San Miguel, the Mercado San Anton, where they're open morning, noon, and night. And you can grab it. And 1 euro gets you this tapa, this bite, that if you have two or three of them, you've had a meal. So if you had a meal for $5-6, you're done. So the food there is fantastic. We actually did see a flamenco performance in Madrid. And I've traveled to Spain a number of times, never had seen flamenco. It's not like you think with the women with the frilly dresses and it's, you know, they're like doing some kind of tango. Not that way at all. It's men and women doing this incredibly passionate dance. It's like, you know, it's like clogging with the Irish, but with Spanish fervor, you know? And it was absolutely worthwhile. So you got to see flamenco. We took a day trip to Toledo, the colonial city about an hour south of Madrid, where we saw this thousand-year-old a Moorish temple. I mean, just to see something like that. And even my son was saying, wow, what must it have been like for those people, you know?
You covered so much territory on this trip. You know, you went to several countries.
Yeah.
And each time you encounter a new culture, new language, you know, fortunately now it's all the same currency. So
yes.
You don't have to trade money the whole way.
Yeah.
For Americans who are planning trips to Europe, what are some of the advantages of going to so many places like that and seeing those different cultures?
Well, for starters, certainly your airfare will scale a whole lot better. You pay a lot to get across the pond,
right,
these days. So you'd be wise to at least think two or three cities, if at all possible. So you want to, you know, dollar cost average there, as it were. But it's like you said, it's more of a global community now. So especially when you're going to the larger cities, there's differences in culture. Interestingly enough, the baseline is, you know, English as a language of common currency is the case in most
places. As much as you might regret it, everyone speaks English.
Right? So you're going to be able to get around. So it's not that much of a disconnect. And the beauty of being exposed to different cultures, I think, is really important in this day and age. Just like, say, if your family is Irish and then you decide to go to Ireland, well, then you're kind of getting the sense of like the food that grandma made and, you know, the sounds that you grew up with. And then maybe you're not seeing something different enough. So granted, my family was originally from Spain. I went to Spain. But, you know, I had never been to Amsterdam. And, you know, seeing the French and the British, those are completely new experiences to me. We're all global citizens these days. We really owe it to ourselves and to our kids to expose them to other cultures. And on a trip like this, if you can see three or four discrete cultures, I think that's a win for everybody.
How did you travel? When we went, we for the first time said, well, everybody gets their own backpack and you're responsible for your backpack, which made it really easy when we were moving from place to place, because we'd say, you know, by this time in the morning, have your bag packed and be
right,
ready to go. What did you guys do?
Well, you know, we did the same thing. What we do is we travel with one shoulder bag of soft-sided luggage. And I can't tell you how important this is as you go from plane to train, because if you've got hard-sided luggage, no matter how small it is, they might make you check it. And then you're spending a lot more time at the airport or train station or what have you. So travel with small, soft-sided luggage. Travel really, really light. We did laundry in Amsterdam halfway through our trip. So we didn't pack that much because we knew we could just wash and be done again. Plus, the other thing is the distances at Heathrow Airport, at St. Pancras Station, at the Gare du Nord are so long. You do not want to be bogged down by baggage. You know, you need to travel light. You know, I can't remember who it was. Some famous writer years ago said that, you know, it was so important to travel light on your feet, that's what world travelers do. It really matters.
My sense is, and the longer I go between trips, I start to feel this way myself, that it can be very intimidating as an American to think about going abroad. And
right,
our country is so big and, you know, everybody speaks English here, right, for the most part. How do you get over that intimidation to actually book the flight and, you know, ante up and actually go and do it?
Well, you know, I think you just commit to it. I think you just commit to it and realize the value of it as an experience for yourself and your family. You do it. And what you do is you prepare a little bit in advance with just some simple language prompts. Because in so many countries, if you can just know how to say in their language, I don't speak your language, but can you meet me halfway? Can you bear with me while I try to get a few words out in Dutch or French or what have you? That simple icebreaker makes such a huge difference. So just go ahead and do it. Do a little bit of prep work in advance so that you know when you hit the ground running, you're ready, you're going to be comfortable.
We've been talking with travel contributor Elaine LaBalme, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town. Elaine, thank you for coming in.
What a pleasure. Thank you, Andy.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, Weekend Edition host Liz Reed will be sitting in the host chair. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. This is Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.